TFYLP is sponsored by CapturedPrey.com. Visit CapturedPrey.com today for all your import and third-party Transformers needs, and save even more through the Captured Prey Loyalty Program. You can also save on shipping on domestic orders of $150 or more. See website for details. CapturedPrey.com. Great toys, great prices, great service. Mega Toy Fan. Maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com for all your vintage toy needs. You can also find Mega Toy Fan at popular robot and toy conventions year-round. Minimize your costs and maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com.
Perceptia here. Welcome to Transformers for your listening pleasure. TFYLP for short. Join us and discuss the latest in Transformers fandom. Now, where did I put that chorus stop? Ratchet, if you take the chorus stop. Transformers! Defenders of
truth. Robots who fight in disguise. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of TFYLP. It's episode 166. Tonight we're going to talk about Hasbro, what their focus is, and do they even care if it's not G1? I'm joined by Daniel.
The Proto Man is here.
Don.
Yeah, buddy.
Brett.
What's up?
And Duran. And Duran's here to tell us some exciting news.
Yes, some really exciting news. We've got I'm just going to be on just briefly here to announce that we are doing a huge, huge giveaway. And I want to give special props to our sponsor, Captured Prey, for providing this great prize for us. We are doing a giveaway, and let me get prepared to share it here. Well, screen share is not working. Oh, there we go. Finally comes up. All right. We are doing the Unite With Us giveaway contest. We are going to be giving away a Combiner Wars Minasaur, a complete Combiner Wars Minasaur. This will include the very hard to find Breakneck toy, as well as the Blackjack Legends figure. What we'll be doing is that for the next 6 weeks, we'll be giving a one word clue. And over the course of the next 6 weeks, you'll gather the clues. And then after all 6 weeks have concluded and you get the sixth clue, the very first person to tweet to us on Twitter, on our Twitter page, at TFYLP, or post it on our Facebook group, we are going to look at the timestamps, and whoever's first that has the correct answer will win a complete Combiner Wars Minasaur. Now, there are a few rules. I will go over those here briefly. But this thing is open worldwide. No, it doesn't matter if you're in Australia, if you're in Canada, if you're in the UK, or if you're right here in the United States. It's open to everyone. This contest is open to everyone. So listen in each week. Whether you listen to the audio version or the YouTube version, you can catch it all. However, the best chance to win, you have to watch the sixth episode on YouTube, because as soon as we announce it, I would imagine that we're going to get flooded with answers. So hopefully you'll be able to get in on it and everything. It should be a lot of fun. Let me go over the rules real quick. The clues will be given at random times each week. After this first week here, I will be giving the first clue away after I finish with this introduction. These rules will be up on the tftalk.net website for everyone to read, and any information like that will be on there. After all six clues are given, the first person to tweet or post on the correct post the correct answer on our Facebook group will be the winner. Guesses will not be accepted before all six clues are given. If you try to guess, and this is very, very important, if you try to guess before the end of the giveaway, before all six clues are given, you will be disqualified. This is kind of, to kind of help keep people, help the suspense grow, as well as help keep it from, if you guess it early, it'll help those people who need to think about it a little bit more, help give them more of a chance. Also, TFYLP cast, past, present, guests, Captured Prey staff, all of our families and immediate friends are not eligible. So, sorry, guys. contest is open worldwide. However, if the winner, and this is important, people, if the winner is outside the U.S. or Canada, the winner must agree to pay for shipping of this item. And if you participate in this contest, you are acknowledging that you understand this. If the international winner refuses to pay for shipping, the prize will be offered to the next person who answered correctly. If the winner does not provide shipping address within 1 week of being notified of winning, the winner forfeits the prize and is offered to the next person who answered correctly. In the event of a tie on timestamps, which, you know, theoretically could happen, but in the event of a timestamp tie, a question will be posed on the episode, on the next episode, and the first person to answer it correctly between the two people will break the tie. In order to play, people must listen to the show or they won't get hear the clues. Clues will not be repeated off the episode. So listeners asking for clues, whether directly or indirectly, will be disqualified. So if you're not, if you're listening to the show, you'll get the clues. And here's a little hint. If you miss the episode and you didn't get the clue, go back and listen to the audio or watch the YouTube video. Just don't ask people about it. If we see that you're asking people, or if you ask one of us, you'll just be disqualified. It's a simple rule. Audio listeners can hear the clues, but they'll have to watch the sixth and final episode to get the final clue to have a fair shot at winning. That's just kind of the way it works. Offering guesses, asking if you're right, automatically disqualifies you from the contest. It kind of goes hand in hand with the other thing. Just play the game through and have fun. I'm going to be posting this as of right now, actually. I am posting it on the main website. So if you have any questions about it, there's the rules. And today's first clue is white. The clue for this episode is white. So tune in next week, and at a random point in the episode, it may be in the beginning, maybe in the end, maybe in the middle, never know. But next week's clue will be given, and then the following week for the next 5 weeks after this one. Again, this week's clue is white. So after the sixth clue is given, put all the clues together and offer up your guest on our offer up your guest on our Twitter account at TFYLP. Make sure you tweet us at TFYLP. That way we are sure to see it. And you will have a chance to win a Combiner Wars Minasaur. And that does include Breakneck. We have them in hand. Captured Prey has sponsored them as has provided them to us. So check them out. Check out CapturedPrey.com. Great toys, great prices, great service. CapturedPrey.com. And also check out Mega Toy Fan. Maximize your collection while minimizing your costs with Mega Toy Fan at the nearest convention near you. TFCon coming up. Is that right, Brett?
Absolutely.
Check out Mega Toy Fan. So without further ado, guys, that is the announcement of the TFYLP Unite With Us contest. Good luck to everyone who wants to participate. Winning a complete Combiner Wars combiner. I mean, this is what about, depending on where you're at, it's anywhere between $80 and $100 value. Maybe even more if you can consider breaknecks a little bit hard to come by. I really wish everyone a lot of luck. It's a great giveaway. I think it is. And I want to thank Capture Prey once again for providing the figures for us. So anybody have any questions real quick?
Nope.
Awesome. All right, guys, y'all have a good show and, I'll see you next week and, have a good time.
All right.
Waiting
so,
for him to disconnect.
So I also forgot to introduce Hang, who has been absent for a very long time.
Hi, everybody. sorry about the lack of a camera. I'm moving house. So
fun stuff. All right. So, tonight we're gonna go into a topic about the fandom and about how, you know, maybe what part of the fandom that Hasbro really cares about, because there may or may not be trends in the current releases. But the first thing, I think the first thing we're gonna do is we're actually gonna take a listener question that we were asked on the board, or that we were asked on the Facebook page recently. And so, anyone out there listening, if you join the Facebook page, you engage in conversations with us, your questions may well end up on the show as well. So James Galtier, I probably pronounced that really wrong, asked us the question: what change to the mythos do you like or do not like? And he gives an example of Sideswipe and G1. Was never a sword fighter, but since the Bayverse Sideswipe came on the scene, the sword skills are now included even in the G1 character version noted in the Creon bio and the new Devastation game. So how do you guys feel about that? Is there any change in the mythos that's sort of stuck that you guys really enjoy that it was a change, or that you really wish that they never did?
I'll go last. Because that's a long-winded answer. I'll go last.
Anybody got a good one? Right, I'll start it off. So I'm going to go with a like. And my like is going to be with Grimlock. In that I'm a big fan of the sort of the War for Cybertron Grimlock, Grimlock that is a brilliant mind.
Simon Furman Grimlock.
Yeah, the Simon Furman Grimlock. The brilliant mind but can't articulate. I was never a big fan. I mean, I love, like, animated dumb Grimlock. I think as a character, he's just so much more interesting as the frustrated, you know, tactician that can't explain himself because that part of his, you know, mind was messed up. So I kind of like that sort of stuck in some medias. He's back to being dumb in the new R.E.D. cartoon, but what about you, Brett?
Well, Don, why don't you go next? Oh, it's because he's muted. That's why.
Don, you're mute. Okay, there we go. There you go.
No one's cutting you off. You just can't hear you.
No. Okay. Okay. The thing that really upsets me, looking back through all the years, is Beast Machines. And Cybertron having an organic core. I don't mind them going that route and raising the possibility of that having been part of the history that was unknown at that point. I kind of relate it to Digimon with the armor evolutions. That was a side evolution that we had never heard of before, but it was a thing from the past. But with Transformers, they brought it up, and it has not been extrapolated upon in anything except Beast Machines. You know, there may have been references here or there at some point, but it was this big setup that never went anywhere.
Well, part of it that could give you a peace of mind is that in the Japanese continuity of things and how they handle, like, Beast Machines in Japan was called Beast Wars Return. And the way that they handled the translation of that was, because keep in mind, in the Japanese continuity, Cybertron was destroyed in Headmasters. And in the manga adaptation of Headmasters, Rodimus comes back and says, "We've founded a new Cybertron." It never really was touched on that much. Then when the Generation 2 mangas came out, they said there is a new Cybertron. It was created and everything. The way that the Japanese ran with it when they did Beast Wars Returns is the reason why there's an organic core was the planet that was originally founded had that organic core. It wasn't the original Cybertron. It wasn't Primus. It was just some new organic core. They used the Zodiac energy mixed with the original Matrix to create this planet to give it life, and that's it. It's very long-winded and confusing, but if you look at it from that side of it, then Beast Machines isn't too bad. It doesn't, you know, I could understand from your standpoint, oh, Cybertron shouldn't, you know, when you're looking at it from the American standpoint, if Cybertron and Beast Machines is the original Cybertron from G1 and everything, then yeah, I could understand your discontent. I know I did initially when I first saw it. But then with the way that the Japanese handled it and the explanation of it, even Beast Wars Neo, you know, touched on it a little bit, it's you don't really get angry about it that much because it's not really the original Cybertron. Yeah. It's not really Primus.
Yeah.
No, that's fine.
Go ahead. No, it's just the thing of it is they brought it up, but not, you know, but in the U.S. continuity where people would be most familiar with it,
mm-hmm.
It never went anywhere.
Oh, I agree.
So you don't have that outside stuff explaining it, which is just – it's a great idea that went nowhere.
I agree. I always hate it when, you know, you go to see a big blockbuster movie and the people go, oh, but you didn't read the prequel comic beforehand to make sense of, you know, so-and-so scene. Like, I understand that, yeah, usually it's better for the base source material to cover those facts instead of saying, oh, you have to read so-and-so and this and that to make it enjoyable. I mean – personally, I still feel Beast Machines is higher on my list in terms of things that have happened. I mean, Lord knows, I didn't like it when it initially came out, but after watching the dub of Car Robots, R.I.D., man, did I miss it from a storytelling standpoint and a characterization standpoint. But, I mean...
And when, if they were working off the cartoon, there really was no origin to Cybertron in G1. I mean, even the Transformer, it wasn't until season 3 that they started the whole Quintesson line about their origin. So it really wasn't too far-fetched for Beast Machines to say that Cybertron once had an organic core, because really that was never established in the, you know,
Unless it's the Japanese continuity, because the Japanese continuity, like that Call of the Primitives episode, they ran it in a whole other direction. They were like, oh, all the primitives, they actually went back in time. And that glowing oracle, that's actually Primus, and it's the center of Cybertron. And like they ran it in a whole other direction.
Huh.
So like the way that, again, the Japanese, the way that they handle Cybertron and filling in holes and the origin and everything, they got it covered. It's the American side of things that our supplemental material was – you guys have to read the chat sometimes to see what I'm reading. The supplemental material, unfortunately, in America was not feeded in that of the cartoon. We had comics, but they were their own continuity. It was Bob and Simon's story that they were trying to tell. So where in Japan, when they had comics, it was stuff that was like, oh, let's explain who Ultra Magnus is in the Scramble City story. Let's, you know, what's going on here with the Headmaster story? They all do stuff that's based on the continuity. They're a lot better when it comes to that kind of marketing and keeping everything in one direction, where America, it ultimately in the end is still to sell toys, and they reboot it. So,
hey, does the kids play when kids players used their storytelling to link everything together in Japan?
Yes.
Did they cover this as well in the Kiss play, when they got everything aligned in the Kiss Player saga?
I'd have to go dig it up. The Kiss Player manga compilation, which is every Kiss Play story in a manga, on the very last page, it actually has a complete G1 continuity timeline that explains everything, explaining that Beast Wars Neo comes after Beast Machines, everything. And they do touch up on Call of the Primitives. They touch up on the fact that, you know, why is Brave Maximus in the center of Earth? And because keep in mind, Car Robots is part of the G1 continuity in Japan. There's a lot of it's something you really got to sit down and read. It's a lot of stuff. And
but I mean, if you want a short version, what is your question, Don? What was your problem?
Oh, no, I mean, it was just that as far as the whole organic core thing, if someone read the synopsis of the – if Kiss Players addressed it as part of their complete unifying overall arc, if someone read that synopsis, would it be part of that to understand where it falls?
Unfortunately, no. All that's mentioned in that timeline is that they say that in Generation 2, a new Cybertron was founded from another planet using the Zodiac energy in the Matrix, and that – that's it. Then you read down the timeline. It gets to Beast Wars Returns or Beast Machines. And right. Then it talks about how that Cybertron has an organic core and Vector Sigma, the Oracle. So do they directly connect it? No. But, I mean, it's kind of going like, well, new Cybertron, Shin Cybertron, as it's called in Japan, Shin Cybertron. And now it has an organic core. Keep in mind, it's not the original Cybertron. You're talking, I think it was a 10-year gap in between the destruction of Cybertron, actually more than 10 years, because it was 1988, 1987, and Beast Machines came out. Yeah, it was 10 years, about 2001. So, who knows? Complicated stuff.
Yeah, well, thank you for the info, because I didn't know that.
No problem.
So, you want to go next, Brett?
Oh, I was just going to say everything that what Dan did, so, I mean, of course. No. Here's my whole idea on that. You're asking about the different shows and the continuity. And I look at it a little different. I actually go back to Robotech and Macross. And for those that don't know, Robotech, which was broken up into three series, was actually three independent series that had nothing to do with each other. And if you actually read them and watch them separately, I think they're better than they were as together. So with that in mind, when I watched Beast Machines or Beast Wars and Beast Machines, to me, definitely those were together. When we went into the other lines, I just looked at them as separate shows. I looked at them, and it's nice if they nod back to it or this, that, and the other, but I didn't get hung up in the whole continuity things. I looked at it as just separate shows because I think – in some aspects, you get a little bit more out of it. But that's just – I go back to, like I said, the Robotech era, and it was just so much neater. I watched the whole Robotech where they mashed all these together sometimes when they shouldn't have. And then later I found out about Sentinel 2 and Macross and all this and started reading and found out, well, Southern Cross is actually supposed to not have anything to do with it. And, you know, so – the Robotech mask. I'm getting it. Never mind. It regardless, they weren't supposed to.
Megazone 23, which was a Robotech movie that has absolutely nothing to do with it.
But it's amazing in and of itself.
Yeah,
and
oh, I've got love
that's just Megazone. It. So I like them being independent. I don't have a problem with that.
But as for the original question, is there anything that has sort of become like a staple
today
in the mythos that was introduced in one series but is carried over in every other series.
Became a standard.
That sort of bugs you or that you
that
really
crime
like.
Crime dies in every one of them.
Except RID.
Right.
That's the only one so far.
Yeah. That's it's just so cliche at this point. I'm glad that animated got it.
There's still always a good character that dies in every series.
Well,
RID didn't have any deaths.
They didn't have any?
None, zero. That series was very squeaky clean. They made sure that even the big bad villain Gigatron at the end, he just got his arm cut, but he was put into the negative zone in the end.
The Phantom Zone.
Yeah, the Phantom Zone. Yeah, thank you. Like,
it's been a long time since I watched that. I didn't realize that no one died in that show.
No one.
No one dies in Carnival. I might get that. Maybe I'm getting that confused with another one. I could have sworn someone did, but I guess not.
No. Unless we're talking about animated. Animated was quite a few deaths, actually.
Animated quite a few people. Animated, the Optimus Prime dies in the first four episodes. He comes back to life instantly, but I mean, that's a record.
He died for 3 seconds, right?
Something. Yeah.
Yeah, they got it out of the way early.
New body.
Yeah. Not yet.
We'll just kill him now. We'll worry about it later.
Let me ask you this. Based upon that, and this is just a little side note, we were talking about deaths, this, that, and the other. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but the main reason that G1, that they had the deaths, the movie, this, that, and the other, is so they could sell the newer toys coming out. Do you think that that's something that they carried on into other episodes, or did they actually use it as a selling point of the storyline?
In the case of Beast Wars, it actually was also because with the Voice Actors Guild, you're only allowed to voice, I believe, three characters before they start paying you more. So you have someone like Scott McNeil, who has quite the load of characters in Beast Wars to begin with, and they're going to be introducing a Transmetal 2 character. They're going to be introducing other characters. It's better off to kill a Dinobot and then introduce a Dinobot 2 then have Dinobot and Dinobot 2, and now you have to pay Scotty more money. Not to mention Scott McNeil probably, I mean, this is not confirmed, but I'm pretty sure if there was background animals or something, I know that Gary Chalk was in charge of a lot of times doing extras, like if it was the proto-humans, if you want to call it that, whatever, the cavemen, Gary Chalk would provide the voice for them. But I'm pretty sure who was the voice of the crow when it was crowing? Who was the voice of the gorillas at some point? We don't know, but somebody had to get credited for that. And Scott McNeil already was pushing the threshold of three. So Dinobot was removed probably number one for a story aspect reason, and number two because they were introducing another character that he'd be voicing, and they would have had to pay him more.
Well, so, remember also that as far as selling toys goes, instead of killing a character, you change him into another. And that was the whole Transmetal series.
It started with Beast Wars, and then Japan really ran with it afterwards because it was just like, wow, we don't even have to make a new toy. Just give it a new color scheme. It started with Super Car Brothers. Armada did it with the Power Link recolors. They did it again with Energon, with Super Link. They did it again with Cybertron. That's just a way to save money.
Sure, and that gets us into the massive – recolorization that we get today.
That's a whole other topic.
That really harks back to, but I mean, that's like, that was a trope before it was, before Beast Wars even introduced.
Well, if you want to be technical, if you really want to be technical, and that was them going super since 84.
Yep.
84 was just like, well, we'll have one car and another car. Three Seeker jets. Hey, we're going to have Rumble and Frenzy. We're going to have Laserbeak and Buzzsaw. Then you look at like 85. You got Inferno, retool a bit. Now he's Grapple. You have it's existed since the beginning. Yeah. That's why when people complain about repaints, oh my God, this series is doing repaint. Even what's happening with RID 2.0 right now, where everything's in the repaint phase, it's existed since the beginning. I mean, it's always been an engineering and cost-effective method to get more characters. So,
and from the beginning, it was I think people give G1 such a pass is because they came out at the same time. If you look at most of them, and they were all different characters. I mean, I would argue the same point. G1's full of repaints.
Well, they are.
So I always do kind of laugh at the people complaining about remake.
In actuality, you can go back further than that and say the Diaclones.
Yeah.
Even Diaclones.
If you want to be technical with that, I mean, there's people when Car Robots first came out, and you know, we were still in that whole like truck not monkey phase where people hated Beast Wars, they hated Beast Machines, and then Car Robots came around and it was this like, oh my god, it's the coming of Christ, you know, the Transformer series we always wanted. And
Cyburn arose on the third day.
You know, but the reality was the entire Death Stronger side, with the exception of Gigatron, was repaints. Every single one was a repaint, and this was a series that was loved by everyone, but that
amazing repaints.
You had three Beast Wars repaints, you had a whole bunch of G1 repaints, a bunch of unreleased G2 stuff repaints, which were Machine Wars molds in America. Like, mm-hmm. That entire line was repaints with just the new Autobot stuff, but people love it to death and they praise it like crazy. So, I mean, it's just a reason to find a flaw. You know, oh my god, it has repaints, it's so bad. But it's a thing that has always existed. You love Tigatron, you love Black Arachnia. They were born from the fact that they just needed to be cost effective. They could have made, like, originally it was supposed to be Wolf Fang was going to be the new Maximal member, but it would have cost way too much money to re-engineer a CG model, so they just retooled Cheetor, boom, you got Tigatron. And people love Tigatron, but if you love Tigatron, then you must love repaints, because he was born of that. Same thing with Black Arachnia.
I think nowadays, though, the repaints are just more planned out.
Oh, they are now.
Originally in G1, they were to stretch the line for that initial launch in the United States to get more product out there. Now we're seeing alternate heads with planned as well as the repaints. We've been seeing characters' heads in instruction manuals that never, like the Leozak head for Scourge, that we didn't get until what, Ratbat?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just more. I think it's just more planned out now.
Well, it's you know what? Sorry to cut you off. We knew that they started doing that when we saw the original Universe Classic Silverbolt, and right away in that mold we saw the engineering for what would be the BotCon repaint. Now molds today are engineered with right away it's three repaints ahead of time. Like, because they're not stupid anymore. They're not going to, like, kamikaze into a mold and go, we're going to do this and whatever. Now you have a Skylynx that right away you see the shades of what they're going to do with it later on. I don't want to say what that is. I'll let people guess. But, I mean, every single mold today is done with what the repaint is going to be, because they got to get that engineering back. They got to get those costs back. Considering how many parts are in, especially a lot of these Generations and Combiner Wars toys, especially that.
Definitely. And I think that's the big reason why, even though it pains me, I think that's why Beast Wars characters are going to be far and few between. I mean, Rhinox.
Look at Rhinox, yeah.
What can they do with Rhinox?
Exactly. Dark design, you know, like, what, yeah. There's nothing.
I really want that, though.
Just buy, you know, a second, like, one and repaint it yourself.
You know, you look at the Cheetor one. It would be a terrible Tigatron if you did it with that class. It would be a terrible Tigatron.
Oh, God.
But that's just it. By doing that, they pretty much – you know, you couldn't do a proper Panther with that, like Black Panther. You couldn't do a proper – because they wanted to be so good with that mold.
They couldn't do a proper Cheetor with it.
The amazing thing is with the Dinobot, as bad as some, you know, it's hit or miss. Some people really like the Henkei repaint. Some people hate the Hasbro one. But I'm surprised they didn't go with a Grimlock repaint. I'm surprised BotCon didn't even try to run with that and give us a non-GPS Grimlock Beast Wars Grimlock. But I think that they realized a lot of those molds, when they are done, it's for the fans. That is really, like, when they do a Beast Wars something, it's like, you know what? Here's the best Rhinox you'll ever have in your life. You don't even need a masterpiece. Here you go. You know, I mean, ignoring the weak knees or something, but it's just, yeah. I mean, great toy. You know, it's just, yeah. What do you do with it? What do you really do with it? I mean,
Now, that's a good thing, Daniel, that you brought up Masterpiece Beast Wars, because with us talking about, it's like next year we're supposed to get Optimus Primal as a Masterpiece. and
hang on. I'll tell you right now. Japan is going to do a burning convoy for sure. They're going to do some clear repaint, whatever. Yeah. It'll be an e-hobby, you know, whatever it'll be. It'll be some kind of Daizujin exclusive store, whatever. They'll do something like that. They'll do a – I like to call it Rasta Prime, which is our Universe Prime. We'll probably get something like that. It'll be an ugly-ass Toys R Us exclusive like that Soundwave. You know, we'll get something like that. We'll probably get a clear Optimus.
Convoys. I like Rasta Prime.
Yeah, Rasta Prime. I love Rasta Prime. He's like front and center with my stuff.
What the heck is that? Here's the only thing I was going to say.
You've never seen this? Prime.
Wait a minute. Now, when you saw Masterpiece Soundwave come out, did you really think we were going to get something like this?
Oh, of course not.
Okay. Then you don't know what they're going to come up with. It's whatever they decide they're going to sell.
Well, especially because with Soundwave, same thing like with Rodimus, there's only two beats you could do. You do the main toy, you do the black repaint, and then you scratch your head. I mean, it's the same thing that they did with the Classics Rodimus mold. They repainted that thing like a billion times. Oh, clear blue. Let's do it in more G1 accurate colors. Let's do it in these colors. Let's do it in basic clear colors, which was the Sons of Cybertron 2-pack. I'm trying to think.
Here's the
Henke one.
Yeah.
The Gente Wild Rider. I'm looking at the whole row of them over there. You know, like it's. I mean, they sometimes have to be clever, and then sometimes they just have to go, hey, let's do this. I mean, look at the recent what's it called? Their commemorative 2-pack with that orange Astro Train, and I mean, sometimes they just go. Here you go. Have fun. We don't know what we were even thinking.
That's what I was going to ask. What colors will Safety Prime will be?
Oh, Safety Primal. Well,
Safety Primal? What? I'm thinking there's got to be some orange in there.
Blue, like his Transmetals version, right?
Got to have some orange in there, like safety cones. Come on, got to have some orange in there.
So, Hank, you've never seen this. You never seen this paint deco on Primal?
Mm-hmm. Is it from Universe? I swear I've seen it in a comic.
Universe 1.0.
Yeah, it's Universe.
Nothing else.
I've seen it in a comic, I think.
It couldn't be anything but Universe 1.0.
Yeah. Oh, Universe 1.0 is amazing.
No, it's G2 Optimus Primal.
Yeah. That's what it was. Universe was Beast Wars G2.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen that one. Oh, you know, my God.
Through the years, I've just wondered if maybe if that was someone's idea to make the Griffin from Aerial Assault that I've been wanting for a third party to do for years. And they decided just to paint the Windraiser of those colors because it would look like the Griffin. Like, there we go. No, that's just for me.
I always felt like that line existed for, you know, because when Universe came out, Bakon still wasn't FunPub yet. And they were still, like, kind of limited to their, like, two releases a show. So I think it was there that, you know, Universe existed for all those ideas that couldn't be exclusives. It was, you know, hey, let's get that Skywarp, you know, Jetstorm out there. And make him a retail figure. Let's
say it how it is. How many of these things can we puke out that they'll buy?
Yeah.
We'll puke this color out. We'll puke that color out.
You're not wrong.
I mean, but you can't. I mean, this is just cool.
That's no. You know see that one.
I did like that one. I like
the
wings.
Do you know the story behind that one? That one, after they explained the story, it blew my mind. This was, I think it was BotCon 2002. One of the designers were like, look at – because at the time they were just finishing Star Wars – what's the second movie? Attack of the Clone Wars? Attack of the Clones? What was the second movie? Episode 2?
Attack of the Clones.
If you look at the original depth charge colors, it's Jango Fett, and then you look at the colors of that one. It's Boba Fett. That was the joke that they were doing because they're the two badass guys with the jet packs and everything. That was the gimmick they were going with.
No.
Michael, throw that up there again.
Yeah. Take a look. Those are some Boba Fett colors there.
I'm not seeing it. I'm not seeing it.
That's what they said. That was the Hasbro designer panel. They said that was the gimmick they were trying to go with.
It's definitely his color scheme.
Yeah.
But the head is off.
Oh, no. They're not trying to homage Boba Fett, just the colors.
Well, I was going to say, the whole white or cream is off, but I see it. I just liked it, honestly, the wings. I thought that two-tone color of the wings was way better than the first one we got, in my opinion.
And it's a slight retool. They changed the gun. They made the tail a separate piece, and I believe his little feelers, they're now rubber as opposed to a hard plastisol.
You mean these?
Yeah, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, they're
like a rubber now instead of plastisol PVC.
They also redesigned these.
That's right. Yeah,
rounded edges.
That looks like the ones that came with
Nightscream.
You're not going to say Laser Prime.
Well, and they got rid of a lot of the the rivets, or not rivets, but hinges, and in place of friction joints.
Ratchets. You talking about got rid of the ratchets?
Like right here, where there used to be a pin in his shoulder, now it's just a friction joint.
It's just a pressure plug.
But yeah.
Right, cheaper.
Universe was a lot of fun.
Oh, of course, a lot cheaper, yeah.
All right, so I guess we still have Hang and Daniel, and we've run kind of long on this question, but
it's a loaded question.
I guess I've never really had a problem. I'm like Brett, I kind of treat everything on its own, but recently I've been, because I follow the IDW comics a lot, they reintroduced Star Saber as a fanatic madman with a sword. And oh god, how much I hate that, because I'm a big Star Saber fan. And the thing is, the English release of the MP Star Saber in Australia, the instructions actually brings mention of that IDW storyline. And thank god that thing is $300, because I refuse to touch that Star Saber MP because of that storyline. I'm like, I can't do it. This isn't the Star Saber I grew up with. You jerks, how could you do this? And evidently it's because of the writer. Like, before he started writing More Than Meets the Eye, he wrote Star Saber as some kind of fanatic madman. So,
yeah, his fanfics.
God,
yep.
God, seriously.
that's
my thought.
Yeah.
And then he kills... Okay, sorry, spoilers. But if you haven't read this by now,
Spoilers for people. That's why I don't like talking. Okay. Because so many... any of my friends that are watching that are so behind on the trades, spoilers. Okay.
Yeah.
Turn it off now.
But he kills Dietless, and oh my god, I just had this, like, are you serious? This would never happen in Japanese continuity.
So what? Is that revenge for Zone or something?
Possibly. Dietless left him on a planet to get blown up. Sure, why not? Here, get stabbed.
Dietless saved his life. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to stab you now. Yeah, no. I had a lot of issues with just that part of the thing. And yeah, you know, it's moved into, I guess official canon when you think that the English MP version release has that as his bio. I'm like, yeah, no. Anyway, that's me.
Not gonna do it.
We got one very big dislike. I mean, because Star Saber is a huge character.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
In Japan, especially. In Japan, he's a big deal. I mean, the MP toy existing is solely because of Japan's push for it. They wanted that. And I mean, you look at any other subline in Japan, whether it be Mega PVC, the Robot Masters line, Star Saber's always there. He's a big deal. So the way that America is, well, the ignorant American, the way that they would view him is different, unfortunately.
All right, so we're just on you now, Ben.
I'm going to go for the loaded gun, the one that, and to this day, it still frustrates me, and it's the way the Bayverse changed everything. Being a fan the entire run practically, I mean, I wasn't there 84 and 85, but I came in 86, and I mean, seeing Transformers and how characters were perceived in a general consensus pre-2007 as opposed to post-2007 bothers me a lot. I mean, let's just go straight for the jugular. Look at the way Bumblebee is. I don't think Bumblebee will ever have horns again as a design aspect. I think, I mean, yeah, okay, we could go to the IDW comic books if you still want to have G1, but I think from a ongoing design perspective, movie Bumblebee, his design bleeds over to everything today. I mean, animated Bumblebee only looked the way he did was because they didn't know if that movie was going to do well. So they had a plan B. I mean, there's the reason why, like, I mean, Ratchet was originally Red Alert in animated because they didn't know how it was going to go down. And then that movie did well, and they're like, okay, we got to change things.
Well, Bumblebee was originally supposed to be a Hot Shot, correct?
Yeah, there was a whole bunch of things that were on the cutting room floor. And then when that movie did well, they're like, okay, we got to change this, you know? And that's why, I mean, Prime was so slavish to those designs based on the movie. I mean, you show the alt modes in Prime to the untrained eye who's a casual fan, and they'll think they're movie toys. You know, they're literally like in the Bumblebee alt mode. You know, if you don't really know what a Camaro looks like, it's really just the same kind of Bumblebee. Same thing with the Prime, a long-nosed flame cab kind of truck thing. There's so much heavy influence from the movies going down. And again, the example that you gave with Sideswipe, I mean, every single movie character, I feel that their influence of their appearances, I mean, think of a character like Skids and G1 Skids, who really didn't have much of a character to begin with in the G1 mythos. Then the movie one comes around, and it's sad to say that the most famous Skids of all time was that one that was so controversial. Same thing with the likes of Mudflap. The name Mudflap, yeah, it was used in a dub name for, I'm going to really like overlap things, but Demolishor in Galaxy Force, which was called Mudflap, in Cybertron, which was then the first time the name was used, and then was used for Mudflap in Revenge of the Fallen. When we think Mudflap, when the name Mudflap is dropped, we don't think of the first time it was used. We think of the movie one. And the best example I always give is the two former MicroMasters turned big name movie characters, Blackout and Barricade. Two MicroMaster characters. Blackout was one half of a MicroMaster combiner. Barricade was a Formula One MicroMaster that was blue. Those two characters, from this point on, if the name Barricade is dropped, it's an evil police car. The original history is swept under the rug. And that kind of almost happened even before the movies, because when Armada came around in the Unicron trilogy, we had a very different take of what a Red Alert was for the longest time. It was kind of that design was Red Alert. And then slowly we went back to G1, and now we have the crazy Lambo Red Alert we know today. But even Armada tried to kind of change our perception of certain characters, or, you know, think of Armada, how we perceive the name Star Saber and how it's an artifact and a sword. And, you know, just because they just needed to get the rights to the name. I mean, they could have called it one of a million things, but they called it Star Saber because that was what was in their pool of names to pull from. So there's a lot of things that, I mean, I could just like, I could look at my wall of stuff and just pull out things that have changed throughout the years just by the way names have used. A good example, too, the name Scourge and how it's associated with the sweeps. But then when RID ran with that name for a black Optimus Prime, and how that stuck around for a bit. I mean, now they're kind of going away from it. They're going with Nemesis Prime now permanently. But there was a time when black repaints of Prime had Scourge attached to it. So, I mean, but the movie, to me, is the biggest, you know, guilty of all of that, where it's just it's taken so much and just thrown it in a blender. And I don't like it personally. Number one, considering how little character the movies have to begin with, then the fact that those lacking characters are having this huge influence on all this stuff that should be the better material bothers me. You know, Bumblebee, you know, with the beeps and the boops and Prime. And I know there was other reasons for him not to talk also from a budget standpoint. But, I mean, to me, I don't like it. To me, the movies changed way too much for that, and it still resonates today. It still resonates today, and I don't know. I mean, you look at the new RID 2.0 series, you look at that Bumblebee. That's a movie Bumblebee design. You know, that's not a G1 Bumblebee design. That's not a G1 Bumblebee character. You know, someone who was a young scout, kind of immature, not very strong, but was at least had a head on his shoulders. Now he's a warrior. Now he has guns. Now he could almost be second in command. Jesus Christ. Back in the day, if anyone would have told you B would have been second in command, you would have laughed. No, it's got to be Jazz. It's got to be Prowl. Hell, if those two died, maybe, I don't know, let's throw it to Mirage. Let's throw it to Sideswipe. B would have been so low on the list. Back in the day, you would have never thought that.
And when you read the IDW comic, he starts running the Autobots for a while.
Yeah.
And that was well done because he won in a popularity contest more than anything else.
And again, the popularity for B was totally spawned. And again, the story written for the IDW continuity for Bumblebee getting that focus. Don't get me wrong. Bumblebee is a super popular character. He always has been. But I'm pretty sure it's also Hasbro going like, especially around that time when the Bumblebee miniseries came out, that was coming off of Revenge of the Fallen, going into Dark of the Moon. That B character was hot as hell with casual fans because of the Bay movies. So obviously they were going to push that character more into the limelight as much as possible.
And then they shot him.
Yeah. Well, spoiler.
Hey.
Spoiler, but
if you're not caught up, man, seriously.
You would not believe how many friends I'm giving shit for that. You have no idea.
I definitely agree with you, because the big thing for me is I really loved War for Cybertron, and so when Fall of Cybertron came out, and inexplicably now Bumblebee has to be a silent, no voice character. Was just totally, pissed me off because he was already a character in the first game, and now it's like now he's just a little guy with a gun who can't talk.
And the sad thing is like, and another one I left out was the biggest thing probably out of everything that bothered me that the movie continuity was created was the fact that the confusion of naming the talisman, we'll call it. Because they couldn't call it the Matrix because of the Matrix movies, they had to call it the Allspark. But because they called it the Allspark, it opened up this huge confusion that exists to this day of the naming of stuff. Back, in Beast Machines, Allspark was heaven. It was just, it was an intangible thing. You join the Allspark. That was it. It was this place you went, like the pit. Which would be hell, and Allspark was heaven. And it could be related to, he becomes one with the Allspark, it's like the Matrix, but it wasn't physical. The second the movie had to use Allspark instead of the Matrix, it opened up this can of worms that now, animated called it the Allspark, even though it was clearly the Matrix, like in design, the way the box was and everything. And, then the Matrix of Leadership was introduced later on because the movies became bigger than the Matrix movies. So then it was okay to call it that. But it just created all this confusion. And to this day, again, I would not be surprised if an Optimus Prime in a future series opens his chest and it's called the Allspark because of that strong influence from the movies.
Yeah, that would be unfortunate. I mean, at least in animated... They never called it the Matrix, but in the end, he has the Matrix hanging on his chest.
Wink, wink, nod, nod,
Yeah.
More or less.
That was definitely caused a lot of confusion because suddenly we were all just trying to figure out, the Allspark, so what about Primus? What about the Matrix? What about Vector Sigma?
With the Covenant of Primus and how it tried to handle that, it is like to this day there's people that still shout out to Garrett and all of them. There's still people that message me on Facebook asking me to try to figure out what the hell they read. And sometimes I'm not even too sure to really piece it together.
And the worst thing is that during all this confusion, Hasbro decided that now's the time that we're going to come up with the continuity.
Right? Which in the end, now they kind of are backtracking on
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Because it was this is the United Continuity. This is our G1. This is the original 13. And now that the IDW comics are doing so well, now they're going like, let's back it up a bit. Okay, you know what? Maybe there's another original 13. And again, spoilers, you know, but there actually is another original 13. And it's not the, you know, what the Covenant of Primus says, which is based just on the aligned continuity. So, the you know, 13 is not Optimus Prime. You know, it's
that was so.
I know that's a real cop out. That really bothered me a lot. But anyways.
Yeah, the only thing I'm going to say is what really disappointed me the most is that that movie Optimus Prime is some kid's first Optimus Prime, and that's the way he's going to see him as supposed to be, and the other ways that we know are wrong.
Well, yeah. But you know what?
And you know what? Peter Cullen. Man, I don't even want to bring this up really because you know what? I'm going to do it anyways. Because there's video footage of it. Peter Cullen, someone asked him at TFCon what he thought of movie Optimus Prime. There's footage of this, but the footage that you don't see is of Peter Cullen's agent. And it was Peter Cullen pretty much gave his 2 cents, and his agent was like, no, 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 no. Don't say that. Because he was pretty much saying how he didn't like the way Michael Bay's Prime was. And the agent right away was like telling him, shh, 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 don't say that. And it was hilarious because if you watch the video of Peter Cullen, it's me and Ryan Sheeny, who's a third-party panel guy, we're both standing next to that agent. And anytime Cullen was answering questions, that agent was kind of there to like tell him if it was okay to answer or not. And even Peter's not happy with it. He's not happy with that Prime. And, I mean, go back and watch that TFCon panel. We know what Prime was based on when he created that character, and that was his brother. You know, and that's something he takes very seriously.
I would love to hear what he thinks about Prime's portrayal in Transformers Prime then, because on the complete opposite end of movie Prime – you have the very
preachy,
like no personality. I mean, they even go as far as in the cartoon to say, you know, he's a Prime. He has no personality.
I think it's more because they were going to have Peter Cullen on the show, because they were going to have Frank Welker. Not to mention having The Rock for that one episode probably killed the budget a little bit too. But just having those guys there, I'm pretty sure they wanted to limit how much those guys – I mean, that's why Megatron was gone most of the season. It was like, how are we going to afford all of this? So, you know, Megatron's gone for half the season. You know, we'll put Starscream in charge and everything. Soundwave won't talk. Bumblebee won't talk. They really had to keep the budget low for the voice acting division of things. But I'm pretty sure when it came to Peter Cullen's lines, they probably were like, we're going to keep it simple. We're going to keep it basic. And, you know, you don't have to do much acting. I would not be surprised if he wasn't even in the room for them. You know what I mean? I'm pretty sure if he had to record them from another studio. I know for a fact Frank Welker does that. He records from his home for a lot of his stuff. So I would not be surprised if Peter just had to run off some lines that didn't require having to emote with another person. Hey, Optimus, you know, should we stop the Decepticons? The Decepticons must be stopped. Because it is wrong. You know, like that's literally Prime Optimus Prime. It's just one emote of something, you know. Should we get the Star Saber? If it falls into the hands of evil, evil will prevail. You know, it's just like, okay, yeah, you know, like that was his Prime. And I feel that the way it was handled was just probably because they had the limits what they could do with Peter. And, you know, that's why RC was focused mostly on the show, because her voice actor was, I like to call them the more Ocean Group people, cheaper guy. Same thing with Steve Blum. Steve Blum's an anime guy. Anime guys are the bottom of the totem pole in terms of payment. So let's focus on Starscream. Let's focus on RC. We'll give, Bulkhead a couple of stuff, and then hey, we do Bumblebee, we don't got to pay nobody, we pay the sound effects guy. You know, if we do an episode with Soundwave, we pay the sound effects guy. You know, we don't have to, or we're using someone else's voice that we're just playing back. So it's a different show, and not to mention with Sue Blue, She had a family problem. She was the voice director. She had a family problem during the filming of the series. So her being absent probably also had a big effect on the performance of Peter Cullen stuff, because when you don't have a good voice director, sometimes it doesn't pull together everything also. You know, there's so many factors we don't know that we would have to like really sit down like Sue Blue and, you know, anyone who worked on that show to really get the skinny on what was going on, because we know so much now about G1's voice acting and how, you know, it was such a loose experience and how fun it was. You hear from Dan Gilbazin how, you know, Scatman Crothers used to play music in the waiting room. Everyone was so relaxed and having a good time that it transferred into really good stuff. It transferred into actors that really enjoyed what they were doing, and they were able to play off of each other because they were so comfortable with each other. It's the same thing that we hear from Sue Blue with Beast Wars. Beast Wars was so good from a character standpoint because Scotty and Gary and David were all joking and having such a good time that, you know, the joke was that Sue would be like, "All right, guys, 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 right? Scotty, stop it. Stop it, Scotty. We got to do this." You know, like they were having such a good time that it transferred into good characters. Transferring the good voice acting, where Prime, who knows? Who knows, you know?
Prime, it's hard to tell whether they were all in the same room. There's always a chance that you're never in the same studio. You just go in, pop out your lines, and then you're off.
Yeah,
you just...
we call it the Sergeant Slaughter Syndrome, which was the original G.I. Joe cartoon. All of Sergeant Slaughter's lines, if you actually listen very carefully, it's a completely different audio quality than everyone else's. And it's because he was never in the room when any of those lines were, like, you know, when everyone else was recording lines. He was recording all of his dialogue while he was on the road with the WWF from stadiums. So the quality was so bad for his lines. And they sound so poorly delivered. Just go back and watch any.
No, he was recording it while body slamming somebody.
Well, I hope not. That would be terrible. You hear like the ambience in the background from the stadiums. That would be terrible. But it's just they were so low quality. And I think, like I said before, I think Peter Cullen, much like Frank Welker, I think he was probably doing it from his studio. Because I know that we've seen DVD footage of Frank Welker recording lines for Prime. And it looks like it's his house. It looks like it's his private studio. It doesn't look like it was like I call it the sitting room scenario where they're all sitting around with the scripts in hand. It looks like more, you know, it's the standing up. They're looking at a screen and they're just kind of like emoting what's going on. So I don't know. I went on a long rant on that one, but
I mean, I think it's what most people feel when it comes to the movie stuff. I mean, you know, to this day, we're still suffering through, like you said, Bumblebees. Like like James, who posed the question, Sideswipe is suddenly a sword guy. You know, you're hard pressed to find an Ironhide that doesn't have two big old cannons strapped to his, you know, his wrists.
I'm just looking across it right now. It's like, think of how Jetfire could be handled in the future at some point. Now, granted, you know, even Jetfire being a combiner, it originally spawned from Armada, but a lot of characters, when they're going to make appearances in future fiction, there's going to be that lean towards the movie universe because in Hasbro's eyes, that's the most known continuity. It fell on the most eyes. You know, most people saw Revenge of the Fallen than they saw G1, as crazy as that sounds.
Yeah. You know, well, you really hope not. And I don't know. I feel like lately, a lot of the stuff that's coming out has maybe toned back a bit of that movie influence. It still exists a lot in Prime, for sure, but Generations has...
That's the fans. Generations is the fan line, and the marriage between the comic books and Generations with Combiner Wars has really gave birth to it just being what the fans want, while the general continuity, the aligned continuity, the movies, that's to target mainstream. Dumb it down a bit, keep it more simpler, make them a more target demographic room scenario. Okay, do you like this guy? We'll make him like this. That's kind of what the movies and the TV series are right now. So,
You look at Generations, a lot of it's based off the IDW stuff, which is what I'm really...
Now, more than ever. Yeah.
They work with Hasbro. That's the thing with their designs. They totally work with Hasbro now. And that's what keeps me really happy. I don't follow RID 2.0 adventure or whatever you call it, because nothing in it actually interests me. It feels like it's a step down from Prime, but then you look at Generations and you go like, oh my god, that's actually really brilliant. So yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I think the main problem is that because they keep, I don't know if it's an American thing, or even when you watch Adventure though, I guess that's not much help, because if you watch Adventure, it looks like a really dumbed down Japanese
cartoon. Like I said,
it's
an influence of focus groups. It's them going, Transformer toys, too complicated. It's them going, kids aren't playing with toys anymore. We need a cell phone kind of gimmick attached to it. That's with the Prime line and Adventures, where it's more cell phone oriented. It's birthed out of all of that. Like I said, Masterpiece, Generations, Combiner Wars, Unite, whatever you want to call it, that's the fan-oriented line. It's going to be more aimed towards us. It's going to have more articulation. It's going to put more of an emphasis on that. But because of how the brand is today, you'll have your rescue bots for your ages, you know, 3 to 6. You'll have your RID 2.0 for your ages 6 to 12. And then you'll have your Generations and all of that upwards, which is like 13 to however old Don is.
Daniel.
Beat me to it.
Don, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's Brett. I don't know. Who's the oldest guy here? But I'm going to take a guess.
Not me.
Okay. Well, then.
I'm also the most awesome. So
there you go. So I throw me under the bus.
No, it's your cat that makes you awesome, Don.
There you go. You're just riding out her
popularity. All the people here, you have the least crap to give me, because I got your pile of loot, remember?
and yet you know it's true. Massey is what makes you awesome, Don. All the fans in Australia.
I don't have to admit it in public.
No, seriously, in Australia, most of the guys who listen to this love it when Massey attacks you for no apparent reason. That is the general consensus.
That's great.
Massey the attack cat.
They love you more than they love me.
Well, this whole conversation actually sort of leads us into the topic that was going to be our main topic. But
yeah, let's make it. We'll hit it now, I guess.
Yeah, that question was a great talking point. And that is that, you know, where is Hasbro's focus, the potential of Hasbro's future focus, and just how everything has, who is Hasbro targeting right now? Does Hasbro care about, say, Beast Wars, RID, Armada anymore? We all have our own G1, and for some of us it is G1, for some of us it's Beast Wars. Sadly, for some, it's the movies. And the real question is, what are we seeing that Hasbro really cares about? And what are they giving us?
Well, like I said, it's what really exists right now is that dichotomy split of three things, which is they've recognized that, I mean, just look at everything that we've had. And I mean, really look at the big picture of everything we've had since the first movie. With bot shots and them trying to get on that whole Bakugan kind of line. They tried to do a card game thing with those like puzzle cards that they did at one point.
Yeah,
they really tried to, because they saw Transformers, and Aaron Archer said this at panels at TFCon, that they, when those movies started doing well, they saw this in the same way of how Marvel was running with their brands. Where they wanted to spread this out and make this gigantic, crazy thing that they could attack from every angle. They didn't look at it at a comic book route. They looked at it from everything else. You know, they had the bot shots, the rescue bots thing. Rescue bots has been around for quite a while now, and it's stuck around. I mean, it's been around since the end of Animated up until this point, and still is generating episodes and income and toys. So clearly there's a success there that stems from targeting that demographic. Is it for Brent? Is it for Brett? Is it for Don? Is it for you? No, it's not. No.
And what Hang was bringing up with the RID cartoon is you have to look at that cartoon as this is for all the kids who started with Robots or for Rescue Bot season 1. They're now what, 3 years older?
More than that. RescueBot started in 2010. The 5 years.
So now they're 5 years older. So now they're ready for something else. Maybe not Prime, where you know, Bulkhead was ripping out a guy's spark in like the first three episodes.
Yeah.
But now they're at that sort of age, and I think that's where RID is trying to hit now.
And I'm pretty sure you're probably very right in the sense that those 5 years that passed since, you know, RescueBots came out, I'm pretty sure Hasbro said to themselves, all right, those kids are now going to be watching the main show. We got to tone this thing down. You know, that, and they openly said it when RID 2.0 was being made. They were going to say it was going to be more lighthearted. And I'm pretty sure they were aware of that because they knew the new crowd that was going to be coming in enjoying, you know, the series. So they had to make it more, you know, friendly, more nicer, a bumblebee that's not as, you know, crazy, I guess, because I think, you know, despite the fact that he didn't have any lines in Prime, he was pretty brutal the way he used to fight. You know, he killed Megatron in a lot of senses, so when you think about it. Yeah. So it's just – it's them – it's all focus groups now. It's all them going like, hey, why does Creo exist? Because Lego's doing well. You know, why does – it's everything exists now from Hasbro just pulling every rabbit out of the hat when it comes to what they think will work. And, you know, when you throw enough, you know, spitballs at the wall, the ones that stick are the ones that you stick with. And that's what they're doing. You know, Creo isn't doing that well. Okay, we're going to make it a limited market thing. Botshots didn't do well. Let's pull the plug on that. What else was it? We had the RPM line. RPM happened because at the same time, Cars was huge. Cars was such a huge movie, and the diecast line was becoming this huge collecting frenzy where people were buying the Cars diecast toys. So Hasbro's like, I got it. We're going to do a diecast line of Cars, and it's going to just have the robot on the bottom of it. And that was the RPM and Speedstar line. Did it do well? Well, it doesn't exist anymore, so clearly it didn't. But they tried to do it, aping off of what was popular. Hasbro's been doing this for years. What do you think Armada was? Tell me, what was Armada from?
Pokemon.
Thank you. You know, it's just whatever was popular at the time, and I mean really popular. I'm not talking about just like, oh, it's kind of popular. If something is that juggernaut of popularity, you know that Hasbro is going to do something to try to get a piece of the pie. It was the exact same thing with MicroMasters. MicroMasters was just because Micro Machines were popular. It's just, you know, the only, like the commercial said, it's the only micros that transform. You know, like even saying like, hey, you like Micro Machines, these ones transform. You know, it's all of that stuff. And this has always existed, but more now than ever, they're just looking at whatever's hot. Again, Botshots was because of Bakugan. Bakugan was this humongous popular toy line with these transforming spheres. They say, hey, we could do that. We could do that. We're going to have, like, you know, cars that bump into each other and transform when they, you know, and that's what Botshots was. Is Botshots around anymore? No, because it wasn't that popular. Even Bakugan kind of is on its way out. So they just go with what is the focus group, what is popular. If tomorrow there's this cartoon that comes out and it's extremely popular and it's all about plants, we're going to see the return of Botanica. You know, like it's not a joke. It's serious. Whatever works is what they're going to go with.
I mean, I need a Botanica figure.
So. Oh, we do. We do. She's one of the few that, I mean, of all the characters that haven't gotten toys up to this point, she's one of the few that are left now. I mean, we've got DevCon, we've got G-Axis. I mean, there's so many characters that you used to think we'd never get one, and now we got a Firestar before we got, you know, a Botanica, you know, who's been in way more episodes and has way more lines. So I don't want to go a rant on that, but
on that note, I mean, you're bringing up a really good point. So I have to ask, so do you feel like – we basically just said Hasbro is reactionary.
Yes.
And so do you feel like that is sort of the ultimate doom for the line as it is that they're always reacting, and they're always reacting maybe a little bit too late. Like when Botshots came out, Bakugan was like two-year property at that point?
Yeah, it was already – and that's kind of, I feel, what actually damaged Botshots was because they were kind of late to the game. You know, same thing. Even Armada came out in 2001. Pokemon came out in 98. You know, so already a little late to the game. I mean, everyone was copying Pokemon at the time. It's not just Transformers that was guilty of it. Mega Man was guilty of it too. The revival of Digimon, which was actually predates Pokemon, but the revival of Digimon getting a television series was due to the popularity of Pokemon. But
wait, how is Mega Man copying Pokemon?
The EXE series, NT Warriors.
Yeah, they had their own little Pokemon kind of thing.
Yeah, but one day just like, thing.
Okay. Yeah, network, battle
typical,
network.
That's very typical Japanese role playing systems.
Something I don't want to get on this topic, but stuff like NT Warrior has existed before in Japan. There was an anime and a manga called Play Res Sanshiro. If you look it up, it actually is the prototype to what is Pokemon. It actually predates Pokemon by 11 years. But I'm not. My brain is fried right now to be bringing up all this info. The fact is that how should we react to this? Number one, it's a toy line primarily aimed at children. Primarily. Things have changed over the years. Granted, adults stuff and adults and collecting has changed. This is a whole other topic onto itself. I did a video about it on YouTube if I want to plug it. But I mean, I talked about adults and collecting and stuff like that. But as it stands, you can never take it too seriously. I look at the RID 2.0 series. I don't get angry because I know why it is what it is. When I look at it and I go, what is that ugly? You know, when I look at this, still in the package, when I look at this and I go, you know, right there, that ugly, you know, but I know why it's there. I know why it's there because they got to pimp that. Hey, kids, everyone's got cell phones now, right? You know, like they need to get that cell phone market because kids are playing with phones before they are toys. So now, they got it.
Now, one thing about Hasbro, though, is they are reactionary, but by the nature of their business, I think they have to be to a degree. And the reason I'm saying that, well, not just that, I asked, you know, I've been at BotCon and all that. And at one point, some of the Hasbro designers said, if you like what the third parties are doing – now, I think this was at the booth. This wasn't in the show. But they said, if you like what the third parties are doing, give us time. We will do the same thing. It's just they have to meet so many safety and production requirements. They have to be reactionary because it takes so long to get the stuff going.
Any good business pays attention to its customers. Any good business. And it's the same thing. If your customers are shopping at another store, you got to figure out what that store is doing to get them back.
Exactly.
And it's the same thing. If you know, and granted, Hasbro was very lucky because when Pokemon was huge, they had the rights to it because it was Tommy and Tommy was Hasbro. They were very lucky, but I'm pretty sure when, you know, other companies, whether it be a Mattel or a Bandai, when they're doing something and it's working for them, you know they're going to try to figure out a way to do it themselves too. The popularity of Transformers in Japan during the Beast Wars era made Bandai wake up and bring back Machine Robo. You know, like they knew that they have to Machine Robo Rescue and then the Mugenbine line, they knew that they had to do something to compete to keep the money in their pocket for that market.
It just seems as though that like Hasbro probably has had some kind of basic skeletal design for Devastator, a larger Devastator combiner for years.
Of course.
But because take Generations Devastator, take Combiner Wars Devastator. You have six robots individually that have to meet safety requirements. And then you have the safety requirements for the figure as a whole.
And drop tests,
and packaging, and making sure
size like that, you need to have drop tests.
Right. So they appear to be only reacting to the fans after the fact, but they just can't say, hey, let's design this figure and get it made in our factories because
you can't do it overnight.
Yeah, and that's why the third parties are faster to a degree getting the stuff to market. But again, it's not really Hasbro's fault. It's just it's the industry regulations they have to fit versus what a third party.
Third party guys have one goal, and that is make the product. Whatever it costs, we'll worry about that later. Then when it comes to packaging, doesn't matter. You could literally have penises all over the packaging. It doesn't matter to them. It doesn't matter because it's an adult market product and people will buy it. Where Hasbro, they got to factor in, oh, it's got to be three languages. Oh, we got to think about the different markets. We got to think about the packaging. Oh, we got to call Marcelo. He's got to do the box art. We got to pay him. You know, like there's so many things. Oh, we got to pay a writer because he has to write the bio. Third party guys, trust me, I know how that stuff goes down. It's like one dude doing everything. Literally. I've written third party bios for them. I did it in like a day and it was free. You know, like it was just like, sure, blah, 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 you know, done.
Yeah. And so I'm just bringing this up because I don't want people to think that Hasbro, you know, we're not bashing anybody. It's just a fact that Hasbro just can't turn the stuff out as fast.
But you know what? It's worth it to wait.
Yeah. Well, now, hey, here's a counterpoint. Masterpiece Ironhide. I'm still not liking that figure. For me, the eye gear, Ratchet and Ironhide are fine.
You know what? There will always be third-party toys from an engineering and aesthetic standpoint that will be superior. I still think to this day the third-party Menasor is nicer than what we got from Combiner Wars. But that being said, you know, there's so many factors that led to why Unite and Combiner Wars Menasor looks the way he looks. Like you said, safety reasons, budget, price pointing, all that stuff. And it's the same thing. I'm pretty sure that Ironhide, there probably would have been different engineering cues if a lot of those things didn't exist. If they didn't have to worry about X and Y and all those other things that they would normally have to worry about. So,
well, they're still trying to hit that straight jumps out of the G1 cartoon look with the new Masterpiece line. And for me, the big problem with Ironhide in that sense is Ironhide is the one that always has sort of because he's based on that toy. The show, he didn't really look like he turned into the complete.
The Masterpiece line exists for characters like Ironhide that needed that because the Fleury-Deary design did not lend to that of the original Takara product. And understandable. I totally agree with you. And that's why there should be an extra emphasis on show accuracy because of the failings of the original toy. And unfortunately, the failings of the original Generations toy or Universe 2.0. I mean, we have, from an official standpoint, have never got that true Ironhide toy we wanted. Even Bakkon, when they did the 2005 repaint from Toeline, from Energon, still wasn't there yet. Good homage. You could see the effort was there, but not there yet. So I can understand the need to get that perfect thing. And I do agree with Don. I find that the third-party one is nicer. I guess the part that bothers you is probably similar to me. It's the hips that bother you?
No, actually, it's not. Well, it's the pieces on the side of the hips.
Right.
It looks hip area.
It looks like he's going to rip them off and use them as like super robot throwing stars or something.
Well, the thing that kills me about that is if you look, they actually changed it. They changed the head. They changed a couple other things because people complain. But then they didn't change the hips.
Mm. Now, supposedly the hip panels can go out to the back. You're so close.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully the hips will rotate like they say. But I'm just I haven't seen any pictures with them like that yet.
Right. Well, the thing that kills me is they specifically put that out there saying, look, we're listening. We did this for you. And the problem is everyone clamored back going, you listened, but only halfway. You didn't fix this.
Yeah. Well, so, I'll be honest. I can't tell you why I like the look of the new Ironhide a little better. That I can't tell you what makes me not hate it as much as I did. But it's still, those hip panels are distracting. But again, you know,
it's gonna be one of those scenarios, possibly maybe like MP3 Starscream, where we didn't like a certain hips, you know, we didn't like the way that design looked. And then maybe down the line we'll get something. Maybe number one, maybe a Hasbro release will be better. Maybe down the line we'll get another release. Maybe they'll improve the Ratchet when it comes around. And then the Ratchet will then reverse engineer back into a better Ironhide from Hasbro. I know that that's been the case where MP9 Rodimus was flawed on a design standpoint. They brought him over to Hasbro. They modified the elbows and shoulders, and then it was then brought over back when they did the black repaint. Now, granted, there was a whole other slew of issues that were born from the black repaint, from stability and plastic quality. But in general, you could see that that kind of stuff exists, where Hasbro gets a retool, then the retool finds itself back into Japan. So you never know. You never know. And again, they listen. They listen. I mean, so it shows that that there's still a chance for it to
be fixed. I guess my problem is I don't want to sound like a crotchety old man, even though I am. But I guess I'm holding Masterpiece to a standard higher than I would based on his previous successes, like I hold a lot of figures up to against Figuarts, which is probably not fair.
No, I understand, because especially recently, the Masterpieces have really been hitting it out of the park, especially recently. I mean, you look – that Wheeljack mold, magnifique. You know, that you know, Sideswipe mold, magnifique. That Datsun mold. All of them have been home runs that I look at them and I'm like, what more could you do to make them even better? The Star Saber, literally, what could you do better, you know, than take the original design, the original toy that was already pretty close to begin with, and give it articulation, and then give it every little bell and whistle?
Well, it's like Grimlock. Grimlock, MP Grimlock is as G1 as you can get.
The G1 toy was perfect from day one minus articulation.
Yeah.
All you could do is give it gimmicks to make it a little more fun. Same thing. Like, if we got a Masterpiece Shockwave tomorrow, how much better could you make it from the original G1 toy outside of articulation? Maybe thicker legs? Yeah, that's about it. You know? A rubber that doesn't deteriorate over years?
Don't want to get anyone knocked up.
Yeah.
or knocked off the shelf because his legs decide to collapse and he falls over.
You could take every word I say this podcast and interpret it in a different way.
Well, literally, I've had my G1 Shockwave standing there, and he just chunks and just slides down into his boots.
Like, yeah, well, that's because of the springs and the legs and stuff, and it deteriorates over the years. Because he's one of those toys that isn't supposed to be displayed in robot mode. It actually is bad for it.
And by the way, Clerchunk is not one of the second – it's not a bonus word for the contest. It's just – It's just the sound effect.
It's the next character in Combiner Wars. It's the extra member of Computron, like the Alpha Bravo. No, but I understand what you totally mean. Where Masterpiece just really has been set to this high standard, that's just incredible. Now it's amazing. Now it's like, so we see this Ironhide and we go, why aren't you perfect like Sideswipe was? Why aren't you perfect like Wheeljack was? Why aren't you perfect like the Datsuns were? I think the only one I kind of give flack, and it, you know, it's not 10 out of 10. I'd give him 9 out of 10 is Bumblebee. I think that the orangey yellow, there's little things that still could be fixed, but still a great toy. I'm just looking at my Masterpiece display. They were just such home runs. I can understand your frustration of why isn't he perfect, one.
Well, Michael, let me ask you this, and this is what I just thought of. If the topic is about, is Hasbro listening? Okay. Obviously, at some point, they are listening, because we did get Star Saber in Japan. Again, that was more Takara than Hasbro, but still, there had to be some kind of shared cost or some kind of something going on there.
Aaron Archer said that every decision that's made is actually discussed, even from a Japanese standpoint. When they make a Masterpiece toy, it's discussed on both sides. Like, this goes back as far as Energon. When they were working on Energon, the Japanese are like, we want to bring in Star Saber. And then Hasbro's like, okay, how could we make this work? And that was the character of Wing Saber. You know, like, they were able to bring in stuff that they want, and they have that happy medium. All those, I call them the napkin notes of Galaxy Force and Cybertron, were all birthed from just them trying to find that happy balance between the two series.
Now, but we've got Star Saber. If Hasbro and Takara by default are listening to people, are we going to finally step out away from 84, 85, 86?
As those as those fans slowly start to, I don't want to say die off, but as that interest starts to wane, I would not look. Let's get through it. Next year is the Beast Wars year. You know, next year is Beast Wars, just like how when it was the 10th anniversary, they gave it love. They gave it a whole line. We got a Transmutate toy out of it. Hell, at one point, they were even going to give us the Ravage X9 until they realized they lost the mold. Like, there was a strong effort to give Beast Wars some love during its 10th anniversary. 20th anniversary is next year. So there's going to be an effort. I know it for a fact. Like, I know that there's going to be something that's going to happen where they're going to give us that attention again for the people who enjoy that part of the grand scheme of the continuities and everything. Look, if you're an RID fan, you get thrown a bone once in a while too. Every so often you get thrown, you know, you get a titanium toy, or you get something that just homages that, or you'll get a Bacon toy that'll homage something. If you're a UK guy and you love UK stuff, sooner or later something pops up and you get a Fistatron or you get whatever, and there's probably another reference right there for something sexual. But anyways, point being is that, man, I got to really watch what I say. Point being is that there's just so much that exists that they could pull from, but I feel that they do listen because – they had something like Operation Combination. Well, I'm going blank right now. Where the auto transforming teams? Why am I going blank?
Because you're tired. Bar?
No, where Spastic came from?
Mm.
Come on, people! I'm looking right at the whole collection of them.
Oh, Power Core Combiners.
Thank you. Woo! Anyways, like, you know, Power Core Combiners, that was Hasbro's combiners. That was what they were like, this is how we're going to do things. This is how we could afford it. And then they were doing that and people were going, well, I'm just going to buy this Hercules then. Okay. You know, they're like, oh, I'm going to buy these combiner limbs that make Colossus. At the time, I think Colossus was just out, you know. They're like, we're going to do this then. We're going to put our money elsewhere. And they know when someone's dropping $500 on something that could be $500 in their pocket, they're going to move the money. And when you're paying $500 for Hercules, they'll be glad to make you spend only $125 on their Devastator instead. So but like you said, they need the time. They need the time. It's not going to happen tomorrow. It's not going to happen tomorrow.
Yeah. So on that point, I guess, because you started bringing in the Beast Wars next year, do you really think that they're going to actually do anything for Beast Wars? As a Beast Wars fan, I don't. I think Masterpiece Primal is all I'm getting next year.
I think we're probably going to get, like, maybe not, like, obviously we were kind of revealed from BotCon and SDCC what's the initial plans for 2016, more or less. We got, you know, the female combiners. We got a lot of other stuff that's planned. But I think that there's going to be some reveals possibly around Christmas time. There's going to be like a UK toy fair, a New York toy fair. Something's going to be revealed that's going to show us here's the plans for late 2016, and it's going to be Beast Wars related. Because it was the same thing when we had the 10th anniversary line. It was something that wasn't in the cards. It wasn't revealed at BotCon. It was just something that was given to us as like, hey, you know, how I could see it, number one, they could probably take old Beast Wars molds and still do some reissues again. That's one way they could go about it. They could take, again, that Primal that exists. That'll for sure be brought over as a 20th anniversary thing. That's a given. 100%.
Do you think the reimagining that they used the animated Black Arachnia to make Beast Wars Black Arachnia in the upcoming Legends line is a trial run?
I think Tumblr would lose their shit if that happened over here. So,
I mean, if it worked using the animated Black Arachnia mold to
with
make
the mammary glands, I don't know. Like, I think considering that a Breaking Bad toy can't be on the shelves, I think mammary gland black arachnia would die in 5 seconds in the face of a soccer mom. So,
oh, no. I'm saying in Japan.
Oh, in Japan. No, yeah, Japan. Japan's different. Japan will for sure. Japan Beast Wars was hot and cold in terms of popularity there. It was really popular with the Metal series. You know, they put stuff in between to buy them time with Second and Neo. It's there. You know, like, I don't think, you know, because Beast Wars, when it was 10th anniversary, Japan didn't really do anything. They gave us the 10th anniversary Beast Wars Returns Optimus Primal Megatron 2-pack.
They did a Telemoca.
Yeah, but that wasn't for 10th anniversary though.
It wasn't.
That came later. That was like 2007. No, even later, 2008. It was much because you know what I remember because actually.
I was thinking Telemoca was like right around the same time.
One's right there. That's the Cheetor there. Let me just get it. I'll check it here. One second.
I still want to tell them about the Tigertron. They're a little pricey.
Oh, hey, Brian, I was
got one by chance. Chance.
Okay, let's
Which
take
one?
A look.
Tell them about the Tigertron.
Nope.
Look at the year on this.
I would love to have the Telemoca stuff.
All of them. They're the best.
It was 2007.
Yeah, you're right. 2007. I was right. Okay. Well, that's what I'm saying because everything was 2006 for. So they did it a year later. So maybe because they got Beast Wars a year later. Maybe that's why. That's a possibility too. So it's their 10th anniversary. That's a possibility. But like I said, look, they even did. They went balls to the wall. You know, DVD, extensive repaint, fancy box, and this line was incredible. You know, like they really. They went all out, so they're going to do something for sure.
That is the black arachnia they have.
Yeah, that well, the whole line of them are over there. You can barely see them because my camera's a piece of crap. But it's just in general, like those guys are—they're incredible. But it shows that there was clearly they had the forethought to go, well, we're going to release this because there's a demand and we want to celebrate this brand that in a lot of ways did revive Transformers during the late 90s. Beast Wars was the number one selling toy in 1998. So it's, you know, there's going to be something. There has to be. Primal is going to be the centerpiece of that turkey for Thanksgiving. He's going to be the main focus, that Masterpiece Primal, but there's going to be stuff around it. I know for sure. There has to be.
I don't want monkey for Thanksgiving.
Well, you know what I mean. You know, like he will be that centerpiece of everything that like the Primal will be that. But in general, I think that how it's going to work is we're probably going to get some Generations toys. Maybe it'll be a repaint. Maybe we'll get maybe that Grimlock I was just talking about from from Dinobot. Maybe we'll get some new molds. Maybe we'll get some Cybertronian Beast Wars stuff. Maybe we'll get they'll take the Drift and turn it into Tigatron Cybertronian design. Unit 2. I don't know. I'm just throwing stuff out here, you know, but there's so many things that they could do. You kind of see it already even with the subscription service. We got that Tarantulas, you know, that's coming.
Yeah.
So who knows? Who knows? It's we don't know. You know, I used to always think I knew what would be the next thing. And then they did War for Cybertron combiners, and that put an end to combiners of how I thought they were going to be. And then it's like, oh, they'll never do a G-Axis, and then they did a G-Axis. You know, oh, they'll never do a whole line of females. And, well, I mean, you never know. You never know what's next. And they listen. Whatever you ask, if the fan vote wants all-female combiner team, they listen. You know, that was a voted thing. So,
yeah. See, my big worry is that, you know, this last year we had Rat Trap and we had Rhinox and we had Tankor.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, Rhinox was the shelf warmer. And the Rat Trap Tankor wave stuck around for quite a long time. It wasn't hard to find. And
my Target still has a rat trap on the shelf.
Exactly. So that's what sort of makes me worried about next year.
Well, I mean, regardless of the individual success of figures, I think that they still – I mean, every wave has that guy that doesn't do well. You can't really point the blame so much just on Beast Wars. I mean, you could go to your Toys R Us right now and find, you know, Legends, Wind Charger, and Bombshells that are plenty of those. There's always – but you can't say that, oh, Wind Charger isn't something that's going to sell. Because Wind Charger at one point was the hottest Reveal the Shield toy that everyone was trying to get at one point. It's more just something sucks, and that's it. Was Dinobot that? I don't think so. I don't remember Dinobot being the one that was clogging when he was in Universe 2.0. Rat Trap, it was just an unfortunate case of it. You know, at the same time, I mean, my Toys R Us had plenty of Wind Blades. They're still doing a whole female combiner. You know,
yeah, that's true.
Someone's going to be the toy that doesn't sell well. It's always going to be that. And it's not really points onto the toy itself that it's bad. I mean, you can look at Optimus Minor and go, oh, what the hell is this? But he's fun. He's a fun toy.
And to be fair, Rhinox's casemate being Whirl also.
Everyone wanted that Whirl.
Well, Whirl sat around forever, too.
Yeah.
There were times where I could go into Toys R Us, and there were like 12 Rhinox and 12 Whirl, and they were there for like 3 months.
Yeah, until they did a sale.
No, well, Toys R Us doesn't do sales around here. Well, at least not. But yeah, no, my Toys R Us still has seven Whirls in stock.
But you know what though? But you know what? That Whirl, to be honest, could still probably sell any day of the week on a table. There's still people that still want that toy, and it really is the masterpiece Whirl that you could have ever wanted. You know, it's how much better do you make that toy from the original design? It's pretty darn good, if you ask me.
Someone would say turn the knees around, but
well,
I don't really care because I like more than
well. There's only so much source material you could base Whirl off of. You know what I mean? I mean, the UK comics didn't really follow the toy guidelines 100% either. They were a little more stylistic. So it's just a matter of who someone's going to be the shit toy in a wave. It's always like that. I mean, you look at Jetstorm and Mana Terror from Wave 3 Beast Wars. You look at again like I just mentioned before Optimus Minor from the Transmetals. You look at Scavenger from the Transmetal line. Which was the Inferno wannabe. I mean, were they horrible toys? No, but someone's got to be the one that doesn't get bought, you know, because of other stuff that's more popular. But it doesn't, was Rat Trap initially a not successful toy? Was Transmetal Rat Trap initially not a successful toy? Was Beast Machines Rat Trap, the Ultra, not a, you know, no, it's not the character. It's just probably in the face of other things, people wanted those more. That's all. They just wanted those more, but I mean, I'm pretty sure if they did, I don't know, if they did, who hasn't been done that really needs it? If they did a Pterosaur, you know, a Generations Deluxe Pterosaur, he might do just as well as the Wave Mates that might end up being an Ironhide retool, and I don't know. You can't predict these things.
I've been saying it for years. I want a Pterosaur.
Well, he's all that's really left, I feel, that really needs an update. That, like, really needs a slavish update. I think he's the only one that really – because his original toy just didn't cut the mustard on that. But
man, that was my first Beast Wars toy.
My second one.
Actually, that was my first Transformer, just period. So
it was a good toy.
I love me a Pterosaur.
Stored a gun in the neck.
And Flip Changers. Yeah. Flip Changers needs to come back.
those will always be around. The problem is, like, now Flip Changers do exist. It's just, you know, it's number one, it's Rescue Bots. Number two, it's any kind of, now that we label as gimmicks, you know, if we have the gimmick lines on the side of it, you'll have your regular deluxe Grimlock from Transformers RID 2.0, and then you'll have your gimmick Grimlock. That's the one-step transformation or two-step. So if you want Flip Changers, they've always been around. You just haven't been paying attention. They were called fast action battlers. You know, they were called bumpin' battlers. They were called anything but. Yeah. Either way.
Yeah. So, anyone else have any thoughts? Brett, you've been really quiet.
Just listening.
Do you feel like Hasbro is targeting you, Brett?
No. Nope. No. Nope. Not at all. No. I don't like any of the new stuff coming out.
You don't like any
I'm that out? I'm that guy that none of it. I don't like the Combiner Wars, none of it.
Well, so, it's good for you because last BotCon you bought like two things. So
exactly. It saves me money.
I was the same way.
I'm the guy that really looks at the Masterpiece line because that's about the only thing that really interests me. But then again, I'm also the guy that loves the Beast Wars. So I'm always looking forward to any of the Beast Wars stuff. Unfortunately, it's pretty obvious that at least until next year, we're not getting anything. And I don't have as high a hopes as Daniel does. I think Primal is probably all we're going to get. I just don't think we're going to get that much. If we get more, awesome. But
I would love it if at least next year they're like, oh yeah, we're giving you a Masterpiece Primal, we're also giving you a Masterpiece Megatron.
That's not gonna happen. Very nice.
What we'll do is we'll wind up with a Masterpiece Night Scream.
You mean Supreme Night Scream wasn't Masterpiece enough for you?
Oh, yeah, I think it was as big as a Masterpiece, wasn't it?
I don't know which one's worse, that one or Cheetor.
That Cheetor is...
That's a tough question.
Garbage.
I remember think seeing about those toys.
No, wait a minute. Now think about that. How much was that Supreme Cheetor at retail?
$79.99.
I remember seeing that thing at clearance for $15.
Yep. That was, oh man, I bought that full price.
And
that
here's
thing
the
is a...
I was going to put mine on eBay with a buy now of $10 just to get rid of it. It broke when I was transforming it. Now I can't even sell it.
You know what? You put that on a table. Somebody will buy it for its niche. You could always sell a big Transformer, you know?
You want to see Massey's reaction to that Supreme Cheetor. He does not like it.
Well, I can imagine if you pull the little thing where the hair goes up. Yeah.
Massey the Attack Cat doesn't like things?
Never.
Especially if it looks like a cat in his territory.
Is that why he attacks you so much, Don? Do you look like a cat? Is that what he's trying to tell you?
Just Don's cat.
Just a hairless cat.
No, we're just having dominance issues on who actually owns the apartment and runs the place.
We've said this many, many times. You're just renting it from him.
Or the cat owns it.
Or for him, basically.
Yeah.
And he's vanished again, so I could be dead in a pool of blood the next 5 minutes.
Hey, if we can get a Massey attack before the end of this episode, I mean...
I just love how I have no say in this.
Like, yeah.
Too bad.
So, yeah, when it comes down to who... I still think, you know, I mean, we see it on the shelves right now. G1 is still the driving force. And I think it's because I honestly don't think there's that many Beast Wars fans still collecting. I know I don't. It's been a long time since I've talked to someone who has said, you know, Beast Wars started it for me and I'm a major collector. I know people who started with Beast Wars but don't collect, but they're still part of the fandom and stuff like that. But it feels like, you know, G1 is still really that big focus.
Everything's grounded in G1. Beast Wars itself was grounded in G1. All you could hope for is that once in a while we're going to get that Armada homage. Once in a while we're going to get that Beast Wars homage. Once in a while we're going to get something that gets thrown to it. But we're going to see something. I don't think 2016 is going to go by with just a Primal.
Yeah. Well, and you bring up the Armada, the Unicron trilogy stuff. I mean, mini cons are still a thing.
Yeah. Well,
after all these years, they've changed. The RID minicons are definitely different, but if you look at those kids that grew up with Armada, Energon, and Cybertron are getting about to the age where, they can start throwing
their money. They're 20 years old now, some of them.
Exactly. They're getting to the point where they can throw their money around and buy these things that they remember wanting as a kid but never had.
Armada came out in 2002.
It's like all my collection right here. Like I came out of my childhood with like six Beast Wars figures because that survived my childhood. I destroyed several of them.
Ball joints. Like,
yeah, they're starting to get to that point.
Let me ask you this. It's something I was just thinking of because you were talking about not that many, Beast Wars fans. You say that, it's shrinking, this, that, and the other. Do you still buy Beast Wars?
I've not bought a Beast Wars figure from a vintage Beast Wars figure for maybe a year or so.
Hang on.
Why?
Because I've been buying the new stuff on the shelves.
Okay. That's basically what there's one. All right. I thought about this and I actually talked to a couple of the other dealers because we were talking about what's G1 doing? Is it slowing down, this, that, and the other as far as sales go? I'm sorry, but a lot of people can reflect sales to interest to collecting, yada, yada, yada. So, and Beast Wars came up, and the first thing I said was, there wasn't as many Beast Wars toys as there are G1. So a lot of people, they got it already. They've got everything they want.
Yep.
And they were also cheaper. So why is G1 still around? Well, everyone doesn't have everything yet. And, if you look at it, it's simple. It's so funny. Combiners are hot, and then Combiner Wars. Then it starts going progressively because most people started at the 84, 85, 86, 87, build. Pretenders are starting getting hot. Well, they've got everything up until Pretenders. And mark my words, and as much people don't like it, Action Masters are going to go up next.
Mm-hmm.
Micro Masters are going to go up next because they're getting down to the end. They've already got this. This is what they need left, have left to get. Now, my question is, and this is what I've seen, your big spenders, and you get big spenders. I've got customers, big spenders. They don't spend as much anymore. Why? They got it all. The new generation coming out, I like the Beast Wars. I like this, that, and the other. They're not interested in G1 as much, so you're not seeing a lot of G1 high-priced items, so the price is dropping.
Yep. Not to mention, I find that and this is unique to Transformers as opposed to any other toy line collector, I find that a majority of Transformer fans are more content having the best representation of a character than the original one. What I mean by that is it's like a Batman collector getting the Hot Toys Batman and saying, all right, I'm done. I don't need any other Batman toys. But which a lot of Transformer collectors, if they get that best version of Ironhide, they really are not compelled to get any other Ironhide toys based off of the G1 character. They're not as compelled to go backwards. Granted, the hardcore collector will go back and get everything. But
like I said, your hardcore collectors are dwindling.
Yes, they're disappearing heavily.
Because they either have it all, moved on, whatever. But this happens generally 5 to 10 years. And I've been doing this long enough that I've seen it twice.
Oh, yeah.
And
I agree with you 100%.
And the amount of hardcore, heavy buyers drifted off, and all of a sudden a new one came along and took their place. Well, it's not happening. It's not happening like it did. So it's stuff to think about. Now, my question is, if interest does start going more towards Beast Wars, Beast Machines, stuff like that, how much you want to bet Hasbro pays attention to that, and all of a sudden we get some new Beast Wars and Beast Machines?
Of course. Like I said, wherever the demand goes.
Right.
wherever it goes, like if the demand starts going, hey, we want more of this, we want more of that. Look, for the longest time, people have always been like, we want more animated. It'll happen sooner or later. It'll mm-hmm. like whether it be through the club, whether it be through Bakkan, whether it be through a main line, something is going to come out that'll be a little animated. It'll do, you know, look at the progression how the characters like Lockdown and Bulkhead bleed over into everything and still to this day exist. Look at Lockdown, a character birthed of animated and is in the movie continuity. You know, so Beast Wars, in all honesty, you know when I see it actually kind of making its return more than anything? When the Bay movies have to go that direction. And I know that sounds crazy, but really, I could see it happening. I could see them going, all right, the next movie is going to be Beasts. Well, it's going to be the Beast Wars. Michael Bay presents Transformers, The War of the Beasts or something.
Well, actually, I've mentioned this elsewhere, that if they're going to experiment with the Beast Wars concept, the television part of the movieverse would be the place to try it.
Well, the thing is that I feel that the movies have a better place to be able to get away with that. I find that if they made a whole TV series, because the thing is that the TV series really relies on the sales of toys to be mm-hmm. successful. They literally are commercials for the toys. Where the movie, the money is in the movie. If the movie makes $700 million, they're good. If the toys don't do well, at least that movie did good. The TV series isn't so much, you know, well, as long as those ratings were good, it doesn't matter if the toy line didn't do well.
Well, basically, Daniel, that's been Kamen Rider and Super Sentai for the last decade.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, and Ultraman. That's a whole other topic, but I know exactly what you're talking about. I know exactly what you're talking about. But that's just it. So I feel that if they were going to do Beast Wars, they'll go the movie route because, number one, nostalgia. Again, now imagine people who've been watching Beast Wars. If you were 5 years old, five freaking years old in 1996, how old are you now? You're an old man now. You know, well, not as old as we could be. I kind of wish I was that age, but you're 25. You know what I mean? You're much older now. And so if a 25-year-old all of a sudden turned on YouTube and there's the trailer for the Beast Wars movie, dude, yo, I used to watch that when I was kid. We got to see that movie. That movie's going to be sick.
That it's going to be me going.
Yeah. But no, but I'm telling you, that like if they went that route, that would be the route to go because the audience is there. If you know what? Guardians of the Galaxy taught me one thing is that you could sell anything to anybody, even if they don't know it. You know? And I'm not saying it's a bad movie. It's a great movie. But it shows that you could sell anything to anybody as long as you package it right. It's like how Guardians of the Galaxy had that Marvel logo above it that brought in the bacon. It was the same thing for Beast Wars.
Yeah.
Beast Wars, you might think it's that questionable, ugly stepchild of Transformers to some people, but you have that Transformer Michael Bay logo above it, people will come in. If Age of Extinction made the money it did, being the movie it was, then Beast Wars will do just fine.
Well, and they're talking about doing spinoff movies now, right?
I mean,
they're wanting to go the whole Marvel route with it and having – so – I hate the idea of it, but it's definitely a possibility.
Ironhide is brought back to life and goes to another planet as an elephant, and the Beast Wars begin, you know. And
hey, oh my! If they do, you know, freaking Magnaboss,
But that's what I'm saying. Like, you have to understand, they have all these names that are just sitting there in the registration bucket, so to speak, that go to waste. And a lot of them have been thrown at Krios. A lot of them, they're just like, I mean, I look at them right now. Cheetor, Rhinox, Waspinator, the Fractal. They used a lot of them on those movie ones. They used what's his freaking name there? Wolfang. They used it to, but then it also doubles as a Cybertron homage. But a lot of those names were thrown around. Black Arachnia got one. A lot of those Krios were used to keep those Beast Wars names alive. They got to throw it somewhere sooner or later. A Beast Wars spinoff movie? Sure, why not? I could see it happening. If there could be a Thor movie and they're happy with it, why can't there be a Beast Wars movie? If they could do an Ant-Man movie and be happy with it, why can't there be a Beast Wars movie?
Well,
they could just CGI Inferno in place of Ant-Man and
sure, but that's what I mean. You know, like it could happen. It would be nice if it happened for the anniversary year, but you know, it could happen.
So anyone have any final thoughts?
We're running on 11 o'clock.
How about you, Hang? You've been quiet for a while.
I guess, well, I do like Beast Wars. I guess I'm not so excited if they try to make a Bayverse movie.
Well, I wouldn't say it would be a good thing. Don't get me wrong. It would probably be terrible. But the point is, it would reinvigorate interest.
And it might bring in a metric crap ton of money to do new stuff we wouldn't normally get.
Look at the Bayverse movies had Age of Extinction. Look at the direction Rescue Bots went. Everyone's dinosaurs. Everything is influenced by those movies. That goes back to the original topic we had. So Beast Wars existing in the movies would only benefit the long run for everything else.
I have to admit, Brett brought up a really good point about where buyers are going towards, which makes me worried because I really like Action Masters and I'm trying to get them while they're cheap.
And get a mint on card while they're still $20.
I'm telling you right now, I'll guarantee it.
Oh, of course.
You're not wrong. I'm not saying you're wrong.
We saw this happening when the Headmaster prices started going through the roof. Mm-hmm. When you couldn't even sell a complete Chrome Dome back in 2005 for like $30 because everyone was too hung up on just getting their, you know, I mean, dare I say, like, oh, they were so hung up getting a G1 Ultra Magnus or G1 this. Those movies broke, and then all of a sudden, everything got eaten up. Everyone got what they needed, and now they got to focus on getting all that late G1 stuff over there. Mm-hmm. You know, you got your Pretender Shell monsters. You got all the – well, there's G1 U.S. Japan, but all of that stuff, that's the lower – because everything's in years. So you got 87 and then 88, 89, 90. Those later years, and the Action Masters are down there. But
well, and I'm even going to go so far as to say that after they get done with that, they're going to move on to G2.
Well, it's not only that. And I learned this the past BotCon that just passed. I had a parts party, and I took out all the Beast Wars stuff, and I was asking my buddy on the phone, could you just check what the sold auctions are for stuff? Because I had, like, complete Tiger Hawk, right? And I'm like, what does a Tiger Hawk go for? It goes for, like, $50 to $60 American on eBay. Complete. Then I was like, okay, geez. I almost felt guilty asking that at the parts party because I felt that, you know, in Canadian currency, I felt that was still out of the question. Let alone American currency, $50, it's almost $70, you know? So I felt even $50 was out of the question. Then I was like, okay, I got this complete depth charge. How much does that go for? $55 American complete. They're on the rise. Why don't you go on eBay right now, do Optimal Optimus complete.
Friggin' $100.
Almost $100.
Yeah.
Yep. I agree.
It's on the rise. It is. Because those fans, that's their G1, and they're 25 years old. They're getting out of college. They're getting their first job, and they're getting hungry for their past. Yeah. I used to joke, and this is outside of Transformers, but I used to joke with a lot of – because I run conventions locally here. I used to joke with the other toy collectors that 90s toys don't sell. That was the joke we always used to say. Power of the Force, Star Wars, Toy Biz, X-Men, and Marvel, 90s toys don't sell. But the scary thing is now they're actually on the rise of interest because these 90s kids are 25, turning into 30s. They're starting to want to get their old stuff back, and that bubble is growing and growing because there's oddly a market for Biker Mice from Mars toys and Street Sharks and all that stuff from the 90s that we kind of chuckled and went, no one wants this shit, you know? But now it is. Look up Biker Mice from Mars.
I don't even know what that is.
Oh, man. Oh, oh that was, it was a 90s toy line.
How young are you?
Yeah.
It's like Cowboys and Moo Mesa, but you probably
An answer to the Ninja Turtle boom of the 90s.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you look up those toys, some of them go for like with the motorcycle, $100 each, and you go, what? Why? You know, these toys were like on clearance at KB at one point during the 90s. It's just because that market grew. Look at even 80s toys, if you're a collector of Food Fighters, Mad Balls, Body Wars.
Visionary.
Visionaries, Army Ants, Battle Beasts or alternative, like all of those lines had a really hot period during like the early 2000s because those were those 80s properties. Slowly now they're on their way out because the 90s properties are now becoming popular.
This but is anyways. The thing I was going to share this picture just because when you were talking about the the Optimal Optimus, I just happened to remember this.
Let's take a look, see. Yeah, see, and you know what? But the sad thing with that mold, though, is that
is the best mold. I love this mold. But, I mean, tons of them. Tons of them. Yeah, but you know how much they sold for? $25-$30. Do you know how much they go for now?
How much?
$75 to $80.
Wow, because I was thinking that it would be more difficult to sell the older one in the face that people would want that returns version. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, well, that one, geez.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That one's probably big money.
This one
now.
Still goes for good money. Really good
I would
good
imagine.
Money.
And the Megatron, which is gorgeous. Yep. I'm looking at both
and
of
Legends
them.
And the Legends series has just released another version of Beast Convoy. Like,
yeah.
Seriously, they keep reusing that mode even in modern day. So
it shows
it's
that
really
someone's buying it. Someone's buying it then. If they're willing to do that, it shows that somebody's buying
Convoy
it.
Right up there.
Yeah. Love that thing.
Like there's one guy buying it, and it's only Michael. And
oh, I wish I had more. I wish I had more versions of this than I do because up until the Legends figure, this is the only version of this toy I've owned.
You want to get the red version, although it's not in the box in the display. But
I definitely want
the burning
version
from the movie. Oh my God, so bad his appearance. His appearance in that movie was so bad.
Banning Beast
but they
Boy.
Needed to pull a hero from the past,
and it was the original combo.
Majin Zarak.
No, I just love the joke. It's like we're just talking to a giant gorilla. Just go talk to him. He's the Great Convoy. You have this weird, weird, awkward conversation, and you're like, why? Why was this important to put in this movie?
I mean, the whole Beast Wars second was all just like, why is this?
Yeah, it was filler. It was filler. They had the buy time
I
metals.
The manga version of it was way better. There was a plot point that ran towards the manga where Leo Convoy gets drunk a lot
and
starts randomly
and
destroying stuff.
And
they blame
Apache
other people
also.
For it. It was just like, what?
same thing. The manga version of Neo was very interesting too. The way the character of Big Convoy was handled.
Oh, he's so different in that one.
Yeah, it was like I don't want to spoil it for people. You can find it online translated, but it's a really good story. It's
the ending was the best.
Yeah, the ending. Yeah, the ending's. It's actually kind of heart wrenching. It's actually pretty cool. Oh. But anyways, I don't want to spoil it for people.
I can. I don't mind.
You'll have to point me to that stuff.
It's really good. It's really good.
If you're going to learn about Neo and Second, the mangas are really the way to go because they condensed the storyline and made the characters more interesting, whereas the anime just dragged on. You felt that you could tell that they really didn't have a choice. They had to push out like 50 over episodes. You're just like, oh.
Well, the big thing, the way the
Convoy was handled, like I enjoy it more than the way the anime handled it. Yeah. You want to say?
I was just going to say it because I have always been interested in that era, but it's hard to find like subbed episodes. Like
I will pull it up for you from my archives.
I've only ever watched the raw ones.
Yeah. Well, I have.
Speak rules Japanese.
I have Beast Wars Neo. Subtitled 1 to 9, and then the rest is raw episodes in my archives. But the mangas I have completely translated in English, so I'll host it on my .com and I'll send it to you.
All right, that sounds awesome.
I read the Japanese versions of the manga, and then they were like, and then I read the manga first before I watched the anime, and so I went like, oh, it's really, really different. Like seriously
yeah,
different.
Yeah, but good in a different way.
Yeah.
Not in a Transformers victory different way.
That was so weird.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh God, the kids are all wearing suits. Yeah. What the hell is going on?
In a good way.
Leo Zach's sister. Oh my God. Why does she exist?
Anyways.
I'm so confused right now. But I guess since we've gone down some this, rabbit this hole of a tangent. We're going to go ahead and
call it a day.
Call it a day. That's the topic. So we want to point everyone to our Twitter page, at TFYLP. We are doing, I think we're doing questions every week that tie into the show. So if you ask, if you respond to those, you might find yourself.
Look how successful this one was.
Yeah, I mean, we spent the first hour of the show.
So be sure to submit
a user question.
And don't forget to keep listening or watching us for our contest for the clue of the day, clue of the week.
Yep. So that'll be the next six episodes. You have a chance to win Combined Wars Minasaur. It's really fun figure. I mean,
with breakneck.
With the proper leg.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really fun line. If you've not had a chance to get into it, you should definitely try to go for that. Whole lot of fun. Join us on our Facebook page. You can find it if you go to Facebook and search TFYLP or Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure. We have a lot of great conversations going there. People posting all the time, sharing. We want to thank you all for listening. We're going to go ahead and mention our sponsors once again, Captured Prey and Mega Toy Fan. I want to thank Captured Prey for supplying us with the contest prize. And so this has been Cyborg 2 with Proto Man, Headmaster Don, Megamis, and Hang.
Bye.
We'll see you next time.
Hey, everybody. Later.
This has been Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, a presentation of TFTalk.net. We'd like to thank you for listening and ask that you please rate us on your favorite podcast outlet and share us with your friends. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at TFYLP. Email us at podcast@TFYLP.com. This is Paul Lighting, and on behalf of TFYLP, we'd like to thank you again for listening. And we hope you'll join us next time for another TFYLP.